Hello. Are you having a nice day? Yeah, nice to see so many people. I didn't exactly know what to expect since this is a level 400 session. And my name is Jakob Gottlieb Svendsen, and I'm a senior consultant and partner in CoreTech in Denmark. And I also do training for a lab center here in Sweden, and in Norway and Denmark, and also any other country if requested. I will excuse my voice is a little bit torn. I've had a cold for like 3 weeks now. Luckily, it's been better since last time I had to speak, where we had a fever and everything. It was not nice. But today I'm going to talk about service manager and orchestrator and the lessons I have learned from doing things in the right way and doing things maybe I did in the beginning, some things in the wrong way, which I'm going to show you. So I would like to ask, how many of you work with service manager today? All right. And what about orchestrator? Okay. So as I started to say, this is an expert session, so level 400. So I'm going to go into really details about the runbooks in orchestrator concerning how you would do it against service manager. So if you do, so does any of you, I saw hands from some of you at both of them, but how many of you work in creating runbooks for service manager? Okay. How many are planning to use orchestrator or service manager? All right. So it's always nice to know. So I'm sorry if anybody, the ones that are not experienced in orchestrator or service manager, some of this might be a little bit advanced. You can see my Twitter handle in the end here, and you can also see that I'm an MVP for, I just got renewed for the third year for cloud and data center management. And actually, one of the tools I'm going to show you is one of the reasons why I actually became an MVP, because they also use it internally in Microsoft. So I think we should start. What I'm going to start to talk about is something about the general design, and you can apply this to other runbooks than just Service Manager, about how to make it and how not to do it. And then there are some traps which you're going to experience if you start creating runbooks for Service Manager. You're going to experience some different things that I'm going to talk about. Then I have a section called Ideas and Tips, which is different ideas of automation. And even if you don't do the technical stuff, some of this might be interesting in giving you an idea of what we can actually do and what is actually pretty easy or not. I shouldn't say easy, since I'm doing this every day, so of course it's pretty easy for me, but which kind of automations you can do. Then something about the administration and the tools for that. And then I have a template which I use for all runbooks, which I'm going to end up showing. I'm going to do this session and show different parts of production-ready runbooks. It is runbooks that I have, at least one of them is taken directly from a workshop / consultancy service I did for a customer in Denmark. Yes. So the first thing is that in Service Manager, we have these activities where we create, well, we have these work items. So we, for instance, a user goes to the self-service portal and they order something. We have decided which questions they should answer, which things they can select. And when they have submitted this form, it creates a work item, which is a service request. This service request includes some activities. So, for instance, if you look at this workflow here, it's pretty advanced. It has multiple of these activities. And you can see one of them is the runbook automation activity, which is the first one here running. So it means that when you have a runbook activity, automation activity, we start a runbook in orchestrator, which would do some automated work, and then it will hopefully complete this activity successfully. Next up, we have what's called a review activity, and that is an approval. And the reason why I show this is sometimes the most important part of at least the projects I've had for the last years since Orchestrator arrived, or Opalis arrived in Microsoft, I've had a lot of automations, and people always think about creating a user, for instance, doing some kind of IT automation. But what I've had a lot of is automation of approvals, which means somebody wants access to something and we need to figure out who needs to approve. So for instance, in this case, this is also a screenshot from a new employee runbook at one of my customers. You see the first one is a runbook called Setup Manager Approval, and the next one is the actual approval. So in this case, the person from the HR department that orders this user will go in and select who are the manager for this new user. And the first runbook here will then go in, see what was selected, set up the second review, the review activity, and set the right persons on there. I've had a lot of that. It could also be access to financial systems, access to network drives. As you see down here in the right corner, I have something called the network drive activities, what's called a parallel activity, where I can put a lot of activities in there. And what happens here is, depending on which network drive the user is actually, the HR department has, or which department the user is actually in, different network drives will be requested. And for different network drives, there is different owners. So therefore, there will be different approvals for each of the access. So a lot of my automation is not actual creating a user or creating a computer or setting an IP address or something IT like that. A lot of it is actually figuring out who needs to approve before this actually happens. And sometimes my customers are not ready for a complete automated solution, but they are ready for the first step to actually get this approval stuff automated. I mean, before, for instance, in some projects, before we came and automated this, it would be like, okay, who needs to approve this? Well, ask Hans. Great. Okay, we ask Hans. Oh, you should ask Jimmy instead. And you should call Wales. You should, yeah. And then somebody at lunch says, oh, if you create a user in that department, then this guy needs to approve. Well, but where is that in the guide? Oh, it's not in the guide. Is it in the rules? No. Who knows about it? Well, I know about it, so great. What about all the others? You have 7,000 people, so therefore it's a very nice thing to actually automate this kind of stuff. And my most important lesson is actually that to actually standardize this kind of thing is the first step. You should go in and figure out who needs to approve when, for instance, or who needs access to what, and describe it in a standardized way, and then we can actually automate it. Yep. So you see, when the actual service request is finished, all of these activities has run. Approval has been approved. There has been one network drive over here where it's been added some activities by Orchestrator. The first one is approved drive. It is down here in the left corner. Approved drive, where I have put the right approver in there. And then the second one is actually a simple runbook to add the user to an Active Directory group to actually get access to that network drive. In the other one called manual activities, if I just go back one step, you see that the manual activities here is empty, because depending on whatever they choose in the form, the runbooks will go in and create different manual tasks, as you can see all these ones in the bottom here. And these tasks can then again be automated. Who should actually do these tasks, depending on which country the user is in, for instance, depending on which department, and so on. So in that way, you can actually automate manual activities, which is usually the first step that you would do. So just to get manual activities sent to the right people is usually something that really helps the organization. But if you want to do runbooks in Service Manager, you've probably all seen, or many of you have seen demos of Orchestrator where they create 1, 2, 3 activities and then they say, great, now we have a runbook, it works. Yes, it works, but what if there is an error, for instance? Where did the error actually appear? For instance, when you talk about service manager and companies that have multiple levels of help desk, for instance, you would have people from the HR department or people from the first level support to go in and order something. And what if it fails? Well, they would need some kind of feedback, not just it failed. It would be better if they can actually read in their own work item what actually went wrong. And to make this happen, to make sure it doesn't say successful when it is a failure, and to make sure that it actually only says success when you think it is a success, is about the design of the runbooks that you create. Yep. So the top three, top five, sorry, it was a top three. I added some more recently. Top five design stuff is, first of all, keep it lightweight. In Orchestrator, we have these activities, and we can have it... we can have a lot of them in a runbook, but you'll see that that's not the best idea. Next thing is a robust design, which means we only want it to fail when there is a failure. And if there is a failure, we want it to fail. We don't want it to finish the work item successfully, and then it actually isn't a failure. I mean, when I talk about when you talk about Orchestrator and automation, you should think of it from every single aspect of the workflow. For instance, in the approval I just talked about, I once had a problem at a customer, pretty big customer. Everything was great because we would, when somebody ordered something, we would figure out who is their manager and we would put in the manager for approval and the manager would approve. Great. Until the CEO, which doesn't have a manager because he's number one, actually ordered something and then it failed. And we were like, damn. Just it worked for like these 1,500 times somebody ordered something and then the CEO ordered something. But we forgot to think, oh, who is the CEO's manager? Since the CEO don't have a manager, the quick fix was to add his secretary as the manager in there. And okay, that might be kind of true in some ways. So we added, they added the secretary as the manager for the CEO, so whenever he, or actually she, orders something, the secretary will be asked and he or she can approve and check that it was correct, the actual order. Then there's modularity. We need to do that so to actually be able to transfer stuff. And to save time, I always use a template. This saves about, I don't know, 80% of the time or 50%. It changes, but it's a very good idea. First of all, lightweight. Be as light as possible. Use sub-runbooks. So instead of having one huge runbook, it's a very nice, a great idea to split them up in different runbooks. And it also comes back later into the modularity. If we split it up in multiple runbooks, we can easily upgrade part of it, for instance, instead of we having one big runbook that is connected to Service Manager that we are not allowed to change and so on. So the first thing I want to show is this design of using what's called three different types of runbooks. First one is an init runbook, which is the runbook that we would actually trigger from Service Manager. Next one is the control runbook, which is the runbook that is specified for the actual task that we need to do. And the last types of runbook is a component runbook. A component runbook is something you can use in a more general sense. I mean, adding a user to a group. You can make a component runbook that can do that. And you can then reuse this runbook again and again. And you know that it's easy. When we, for instance, talk about the components, it will be much easier to test that your add user runbook will work compared to having everything in a large runbook where you have to trigger different errors to actually make stuff happen. So the initialization runbook will handle different things that and will be triggered from Service Manager. Control runbook, as I said, is where we have the logic we need for this specific task or this specific workflow. So if something needs to be updated, well, as long as our initialization runbook is a standardized and well-tested runbook, well, we can just change, we can just upgrade or change the control runbook, upgrade the control runbook to another version, and just have the init runbook run that runbook instead. If you have worked with Orchestrator and Service Manager, you will know that if you change a runbook that Service Manager is supposed to trigger, you need to actually go in and do some manual stuff, like you need to first sync it, and then it gets invalid, then you need to remove it, then you need to sync it back in, and you need to maybe change something inside Service Manager. Could be stuff in the actual offering, the form that we show, or in the template. So to keep that from happening, because that would sometimes require a bigger change request, or it would be harder to get accepted, it's much better to split them up. Let me go into the first demo. This is my development environment, so don't mind that all the folders are not correctly named and so on. But if we look at this one, create user, as you can see, it takes a little while to load. This is actually, I must admit, that this is something I've done before. Here you go. Here's a runbook. So you see here that it has a lot of activities. A lot of activities. Because each step that actually happens in this runbook, we need to actually have a successful link, and we need to have a failure link to be able to report an error back to the actual work item in Service Manager. So this would be how it would look like. And the thing is that this runbook that we call here, or this activity that we use here, is an activity that calls another runbook. It has a lot of configuration in there, so therefore it takes a lot of memory, or at least more memory than a more simpler activity. So you should not do this. This is I mean, I actually had once, and that was my very first assignment, where they then asked, we need to create an incident too, not only add it to a log, but we need to create an incident too. So I would go in and add and create incident on all of them. And it took like half a day, almost a day, I think. Waste of time. So don't do that. It also says not recommended here. Let's look at one that is actually made using my best practice, which I'm going to talk about the different parts of today. First of all, you see I have the init runbook. The init runbook is pretty simple runbook. It has some inputs here from the service request, which is the service request work item ID, the first one, which is SR number something, which number the actual work item has. The second one is the actual ID that the service request has. And this last one is the ID of the activity that triggered the runbook. So the last two ones, this is object grid, that is what the activities in Orchestrator are using to get the information from these objects. So this will be what I'm using in the runbook. The first one, I usually don't use that in my runbook, but when I need to go back to my runbook at a later time, for instance here, and look, well, it's pretty difficult for me to see which case this is when the customer says it's SR number something that failed. It's much easier if I send in the number of the activity. So I usually don't use it, but I have it in here just to be able to see the logs easier. But what is really important is that this first runbook handles error, any error logging. As you can see, it looks like the first runbook I showed. It has the second step, which is here, is to add something to the action log on the service request if something failed. So the thing is, when this starts, when Service Manager starts this runbook, it goes here. This fails. It then goes here. No, actually, this will be successful because it's allowed to start this runbook. Because unless it's gone or something like that. But if then this runbook, second runbook, fails somewhere in the middle, well, this will still be a success. So, but it won't continue to the next step. It'll go down here and add the action log. And this will also be a success. So all the three activities that has run will actually be a success. So what will Service Manager say? It's a success. this is a successful run because all of the activities here have been successful. So the last step I have, no matter if the error action log activity fails, but it will go to that last step, will actually create an error. This means that I can go in, let's take a look at another one. This one, for instance, which I just, well, let's see, no, sorry, I don't have one to show right now. But this means that if I look at the results of this runbook, if it's green, it's because it's good. If it's an error, it's because it failed. And anyone who's worked in Orchestrator knows that this can be a little tricky to actually see if you don't do stuff like this. So the next thing is that the runbook, the second runbook is the control runbook, and the control runbook, as you can see in this case, goes in, gets something from the service request, gets the information from the service request, and does some different tasks. I'm going to get back to some of them. But for instance, this first one is getting the service request. So if you search for a specific ID and it doesn't get a result, this activity will still be successful because its job was to search for a service request. The job was not to find one. So therefore, we need to add our own logic to this. And the way I do this is, for instance, if you have a search, you would say, okay, in this case, I expect one object because I have an ID for a service request. I want to get the information from that service request. So I go in and check and say, okay, there's only one result that's valid. And if it doesn't find one, and I just give it the opposite one, saying, if you don't find one, well, use the error link instead and go report an error. Instead of having these very heavy activities that I showed before to execute a runbook, we just have these return data activities. They are very light. And what I have in my runbook is to actually add two different properties that it can send back. One of them is called status. As you can see, it's called error here because it's an error, a return of an error. And then I have an error details where I can write in an actual error message. Like that. All right. So when it goes through the list here next and go through the runbook, when it reaches the end, it will actually return an OK. And this is the important part, actually, because this is my success criteria. In my first init runbook, I will go in and check, okay, if I get a status okay from this runbook, I know that it has completed all the activities that I want to complete. If I had some kind of error, for instance here, and it didn't continue and it just stopped at this activity, well, it would be blank then. And then I can actually trigger on errors that I didn't expect myself. So back to the init runbook, you'll see that this one says continue. Continue always, but exclude if it contains error. And since this can sometimes include multiple results, which is comma separated, it is not supposed to actually return, for instance, a comma or two commas or a completely blank result. So this is something that I have worked with and made sure that this handles all errors that could happen for the other runbook. And here, this is why the template comes into play, of course. And I have the exact opposite for the error here. So if this doesn't return an OK, or OK, comma, OK, comma, OK, if there's an error, or if it just returns any kind of blank result, it will go down to the error handler and put it in the log, and then make sure the runbook fails so that we can see it in the log and service manager can see it. Last one is the component. It's very simple. It's just for doing one simple task, like in this case, check if a group in AD exists and create it if it doesn't. Actually, there is a free ebook you can download from Microsoft, which describes this in more detail, called Runbook Best Practices. And I'll make sure I don't have the link in my slides, but I'll make sure to post it on Twitter. Yes, but let's continue to the next step. Whoops. So the errors, as I said, sometimes if you create, for instance, if you create a user and you can't create the user, you will get an activity failed. But if you search for something and you don't find it, well, it's a success in orchestrator terms. So therefore, we need our own return OK. And we can then define what is an error. And that's the hardest part of making a robust runbook, is that you can actually, that you actually need to think about all the errors that can happen. If we needed, one user and if we're expecting one result and we get zero, that must be an error. If we are expecting one and we get two, that's also an error. And so on. You have to think about all the different aspects of it. Yes. And when it happens, where do we put the errors? In this case, when it's service, when it started as a service request from service manager, the most obvious thing is to add it to back to the service request. That could either be in the action log on the service request itself, or in the action log on the actual activity in the service request. But you should remember, if you do that, that if you don't mark it as private, then the end user can see it too. And sometimes you don't want that. Sometimes you only want your analyst in your help desk being able to see it, but not the actual user who ordered something. Yes. And then we create an error, as I said, and I use just PowerShell using the throw command to actually create an error. I also created a Cortex error integration pack, which has the most simple activity that does the same, creates an error. So if you rather want to use a specific activity, you can download this from my blog or from TechNet Gallery and use that activity. Or you can create your own integration packets. It's a good place to start if you want to do that. Yep, I already showed that. Yes. So the next step is, since I'm a consultant, my best goal is to create something for a customer that I can reuse somewhere else. Of course, that's not the only reason why I want to be able to move stuff, because usually you would have multiple environments. You have development environment, you have test environment, you have maybe have a pre-production environment, and then you have a production environment. So up to four different environments, orchestrator environments. And what we really want to do is to be able to move our runbooks to the next environment. So in Orchestrator, we can export stuff, but we can only select a folder or a runbook. So the first step is, of course, save everything within the same folder. Makes it much easier to transfer. And avoid what I call external runbooks. Let's just see. Yes, but since you might have multiple or a lot of runbooks within a specific solution, what I usually do is to create a folder structure like this, where I have the main folder, in this case called user termination, and then for each of the stages, I'm going to come back to that later, each of the stages in this workflow, for instance, creating the, this was just the disabling the Active Directory account, removing the user from groups, removing the email address and so on, having those in different folders. But since they all need to report somewhere to actually log the error to the action log, for instance, they use a lot of shared runbooks. So I create a folder that I call .99, so it ends in the bottom, which calls shared runbooks, where I put these runbooks in. This means I can go to the top folder and export that, and I have a package of all my stuff. Then I can export the management pack from Service Manager, which contains all the forms and so on, and I can save this as a package solution that I can actually convert to or install in my own environment or another customer environment or in production. Of course, later, if I need to upgrade a specific part of it, I might import a new runbook into specific folders within this solution. Yes. So what I then discovered after a while was that to keep track of the versions in these solutions was a bit hard. So what I started to do in the beginning was to, on the first folder, to actually add a version number, .1.9. And that was great. But still, I had a pretty hard time actually figuring out which run books were changed in this version compared to the last version. So what I started to do was to add the version number to the run book, which you can see. First of all, as I said, I change the number up here whenever I have some new stuff I need to do. Then I give the same number, as you see over here, to the run book that I actually change. So the run book we have on the left side is number 1.8. That's because it hasn't been changed since version 1.8. And in that way, I can come back at any time later to my customer and I can say, okay, I can then look back and see, okay, this was the run book that we changed last time. So I might have introduced a problem there or whatever happened. And this way I can really keep track of which run book is in the versions. So all of these activities here, all of these folders contain a stage. This means that I separate it in a lot of stages. I do that because in Service Manager, as I showed in the beginning, we can have multiple run books. Okay, so it makes it a little bit slower, a tiny bit. But it makes my run books much more simpler. I mean, if I have a create user run book, I can test that. Then I have a create email address run book, I can test that again and again, so on. So it makes it much easier to test. And the best thing is that if one of these fails, let's say here we go in and we create the user in the third activity, and then the next one called create network drive activities fails. If we had to restart everything, well, the user would be created again. That would be stupid because the user already exists. But in this case, it would be the fourth activity, the create network activities, that would fail. And in that way, I can actually go back in Service Manager and use what's called return to activity on the actual activity. And if somebody was watching me prepare and saw my run book fail, that is exactly why I did that. So in this case, we have a failed activity. So what I would explain to my customer, and they would explain in their guide to the help desk, is that if something fails here, you should look at the error in the action log. And if you can see that the error, and then you figure out, of course, why is this error there? Ask the right persons to do that. But when the error is fixed, in this case, it was just a run book that wasn't checked in because somebody edited it, which was me, of course, and try to run it. So when they know it's working, they can actually go in, right-click this, and click return to activity, write a comment, retry after fix, and then save the actual... actually, this has been open for too long. Always a good practice in Service Manager is to search your... Don't keep it open for a long time, because there might be stuff in the background happening. And I forgot to put a title in this demo, so that's why I couldn't save it. Go in, and then I click return, we click retry, something like that, and then we click OK. And it will now go in and save the service request, and we can actually go in, we can check the status. You see the status of the activity is now starting, which means that it starts it in here, this one. This means that we can retry different parts of the run book instead of everything again. And it still says fails up in the service request status, but that will change in a minute. And the actual things I wrote will be typed automatically into the implementation notes. So there is some traps which I've all fallen in several times. First of all, since we are in Scandinavia and not in the US, and they completely, as usual, forgot that there is any countries except the Grand United States, it only works properly if you set your computer to set the service account on the runbook servers to US local. On all the runbook servers that needs to run these runbooks in the service account context. So that means, for instance, logging in as the service account and actually and setting the US. You can also do it by group policy, for instance. But it's really important because you might test your runbooks and you might create a search request that works fine and you do this thing and that thing. And then suddenly you try to set a status on an item and the status is completed, which is the English status, US status. So when it tries to connect as a Swedish account, it'll try to match the completed word with the Swedish list of words, and then it doesn't work. And then you would think, oh, you can just write in the Swedish word for completed then. In Danish, it's fullført. But that doesn't work either. So it's really important to test that this actually works to set some of these properties that has the actual problem. So test by setting the status as of an item, then you're sure. Next thing is also something that you might not notice in beginning, as at least as a technician. Because when you create if you create a new service request using a runbook, using the built-in activities, it will end up looking like this. And you'd say, great, it's perfect, it's in progress, it has activities, everything is great. But then they have to make reports later, and they look at the number up here in the right corner, left corner, of course, and it doesn't have the SR in front of it. Or if this is an incident, it doesn't have the IR in front of it. So then this you can actually set in your runbook. I'll show that in a second. But the other problem is that the activities, which is within the template, they were supposed to be named RB, RA, or whatever kind of activity it is, but they don't have it. It's a built-in mistake, probably by design. You see, it was supposed to look like this, with the CR in top and the manual activities here. So we need to use the correct prefix on the actual IDs. In Service Manager, we have this token called these brackets and then a zero, which will insert the number of the actual case. So you would use when you create a service request or an activity to write SR and then this number. Yes, but you can't do it manually on the activities that are included in your template. So for that, I had to create an activity which you can download from the TechNet gallery called the SESM extension IP. It contains one single activity that can create some kind of object in Service Manager, some kind of work item. So you don't need to describe if it's an incident or a service request. You just need to type the ID of the template or the name of the template, and then it will create it properly with the right activity prefixes. If you create an incident, let me just show you that quickly. When you create an incident, for instance, you see that when you start and put in the activity, it will look like this. What you need to add is actually to go in and add the ID, and then you'll see that the actual default value for the ID is just that number, that token for the number, and you go in and you write IR in front, and now it's a proper, as long as it doesn't include activities. Next thing you need to think of is, when is an approval an okay approval? You really need to think that, for at least if you create one from Orchestrator, it doesn't really say which fields are required. So what I discovered was that you need to set an approval condition. When is the approval actually successful for it to work in a portal? If you don't, you will get a successful creation, everything is great, and then you go to the portal and the activity doesn't work. Portal crashes. I think that was the problem. So the approval condition is, for instance, how many percent needs to be accepted. And one thing we discovered pretty recently, which I'm pretty sure didn't work in the beginning, was that you can actually insert a group as the approver. This kind of stands against the ITIL that says that you have a specific persons in there that needs to approve, but you can, if you want to, add a group. And all the people in this group will then see this approval. You should have the group should have an IP email address to a distribution list to all the persons in the group, of course. And then the other day we had a customer saying, "Hey, there was two guys who could accept this. One of the guys said no, but the other guy said yes. So it ended up in being an approval. That's not correct. We need to have, if one of them says no, it needs to be rejected." Oh, but that's what's called veto. So just to remind everybody is that if you put on veto at on a specific approver, then if they say no, well, then that counts. If they say yes, then it's just a normal yes. But if they reject, then it will be rejected. Next up, must vote is another option you can set on approver. Do they need to go in and actually vote and say yes and no? So of course, you need to set must vote on if you don't want the activity to continue before the person has replied. And that could be some situations where you want the CEO or some high-level boss go in and make their opinion, and the other people always also puts in their opinion. Yep. So, a little bit about ideas and tips. First of all, when Service Manager starts an activity, and you should be reminded that Service Manager is made for handling a lot of these activities. So it has up to it every 5 minutes it will go in and check, is the run book complete? Is the run book complete? Is the run book complete? And 5 minutes, if you have 10 different stages times five, that's 50 minutes extra time, up to 50 minutes extra time. That is a lot. So what I discovered was that that what I do when I'm sure that my run book was successful, I actually go back and I actually complete the activity by using the run book itself. So if we look back at my standard template here, standard initialization run book, you'll see the second list here says complete the run book activity. And that's why I sent in the run book activity, so I can complete it. This means that as soon as the run book is completed, the activity will be set to complete it. And when the activity is set to complete it, there's another workflow that actually checks if the next activity needs to be run or is set in progress. And that workflow runs every minute. So you actually save up to 50 minutes if you have 10 different stages doing this. So I always do that. But what I discovered was that if you go in and do different changes in... Go back. If you go in and make different, as the last point says, if you go in and make any changes to the order of the activities, like a new activity has been added, or you move one, or you, yeah, whatever you do, if you do that, then you should not complete the activity manually, because this, when you complete it, it actually skips this workflow that would set it to complete it, and that workflow also changes which is the next run book. So if you don't do that and you insert multiple run books, you will actually have a really weird workflow, because it will not start the next activity. It will jump down to what was the next activity before we actually started the run book. So in that case, you will have to wait. When you design these offerings for the users, the most important part always in any kind of automation that you put out to end users or to help desk or whatever, is to limit as much as possible. Make sure that they cannot select users they are not supposed to select. Make sure that they cannot write in an invalid email address. And all these things are built in Service Manager, that you can put in these limits on the actual offering. So as much as possible, limit what they can select. When you have then the inputs that the user actually writes, let's say you have 10 different questions, or I have one with 40 different questions. Where should we put the results of these questions? By default, in Service Manager, there is a requirement that any kind of question needs to be mapped to a specific field. And there isn't 40 different fields. So what we can do is, either if it's different questions for different activities, You can map them into the different activities where the questions belong to. Even if you have somebody selecting, for instance, which office equipment they want, you can then map that answer into the office equipment manual activity, and they will be put in there. If they and any comments for that would you can then map to the comment or the notes field on that activity. Another thing that we have done is to actually extend the service request class. So a normal service request would include a lot of properties, but we add another class that has, as you can see here, actually has 25 different text strings, five different date fields, it has 10 different integer fields, and so on. In this way, we can then, any kind of question in the offering, we can map to any of these input string fields, and service manager is happy. And whenever we need one of these answers, we can just use in our orchestrator the service request and then get one of these fields. Because sometimes some of these answers needs to be used multiple times in different activities. For instance, this could be input string number one could be what is the type username that they were requesting, if that's the case. Yes. Use query results as much as possible. As you just said, type in the username, not a good idea. If they should select a user, you should show a query result that selects a user. And actually, you can do more advanced criteria in XML than you can in the GUI. So you can actually go in and on these query results and make sure they show the right stuff. When we then need to get these query results answers, which users has they selected? The built-in option to do that is to get relationships. So you say, okay, this is a service request, get all the users that are attached to this service request. And then you get maybe three users, one that has created it, one that has the last modified or the assigned to user, and then you have the user that this runbook selected. What you then do is filtering by the relationship name. So for instance, an activity that you add through an offering would use the one called about configuration item, and that's fine. And I thought it was fine too, until I discovered one day that somebody sent an email into this specific request. And the person who sends the email will also be added to the service request using the same relationship as the offering. So now we have two different users attached, and I need to delete a user. Who am I supposed to delete? Is it the user that they selected, or which is the user that actually sent in the email to this case? So I changed the actual logic. Instead, I'm going into when they select something, there's been generated an XML in the service request called user input. This XML has all the values that were shown in the portal plus the ID of the object that was selected. Then I have a standard shared runbook to actually get that information. The only downside of this is that it uses the question as the reference. So if I tell the customer, now I've created this offering for you, you are not allowed to change the names of the questions without just either changing the runbook or consulting me first, because I need to know which answer to which question it is. When I then have the result, I can then use the get object using this ID, the GUID, that I got from the XML. Yep. I would like to I can just show it quickly to you that it's when you download my stuff after this, it's in the shared runbook. You see, I have one to add to the action log, and then I have this one that can actually go in and get this from the user input. So you just need to input the question and the actual user input from the service request, and then it sends out the actual ID that was selected. You can see in my examples how I would use it. Yes. Next thing is, and I have to be a little bit quick here, I see, is that everybody has experienced another user has changed an object in Service Manager, and the runbook will actually experience that too. So whenever you update something in Service Manager, anything you update, anything you write to a specific work item or object that exists, you should use the internal looping in Orchestrator to actually retry if something happens. So always retry 10 times, and it actually in some environments this is common that it happens in almost every time it runs. This actually goes back to my controlling the logic, because if this were to happen, if this were to fail and loop and then go to next step, and this was the run book that service manager would trigger, service manager would see it as a failure because it failed. But it was successful afterwards. So using the returnal of the OK, I can actually do that. The starter template, download that from the TechNet gallery as soon as it's up there, because I haven't sent it up there yet, but I will do today. Then you can import it, and what you'll get is a couple of folders, like you have a main folder, you have the monitor folder, you have one of these steps here, and then you have the shared run books. So I always import that part. But if I need to create another stage, I then export the stage and then import it again and put it in here. Because if I had it in an external file, it would not refer to the same shared run books down here. So it's important that you import your template. And if you need another stage, you can then export this. But I'll make sure to write that in the guide too for the template. Yep. So next problem is when you export some run books, as I showed in the beginning, and you import it in a new environment, they all get new IDs. Then you import your management pack to your to your service manager environment, and the management pack is using the IDs to start the run books. So what happens? It cannot find the run books. And this was a tool that has been that I made a couple of years ago, and it's actually called the it's actually wrong. Transfer tool. Nice. Anyway, I created this transfer tool, and what you do in the tool is actually to, when you export your run books, you run the tool, and it'll get all the extra information about the run books, such as their name. Then you go to your target environment, and you run the tool again after you imported the run books, and it will go in and figure out what is the new IDs for each of these run books. Then it will ask you to select your management pack, and it will go into the management pack and replace all the IDs. So this means that you can transfer from one environment to another without having to do any kind of manual changes to the run books or to the management packs. There's also a custom activity type made by my friend Ryan Andorfer, which you can download, which doesn't use the same way of triggering run books, but you can take a look at that. I have a link in the end. You should also know that global settings are exported, so if you export something, all the global settings that you have will be included, even the ones that you don't use. And here Ryan comes to rescue again, because he has a utility called Pass Export and a utility called Sanitize Export. They both do the same. They go into the actual export and remove all the stuff that is not used in the run books. So it kind of sanitizes it, as it's called. Actually, in the old Opalis course from Courseware Microsoft, they actually said that you should open this XML file in Notepad and then remove the stuff you don't need. That's how they pronounce it. So I should say to my students, hey, open this file. And the great thing is, when you export it, there's no line break. So everything is in one line. The hugest line ever, and just remove what you don't need. No, that's not possible. You can maybe do it with a XML editor. This is much easier. And if you need to do it on more than one export, you can use the Sanitize Export, which is a console-based version that can be run from a command line and do this stuff. The other one is a GUI-based version. Yep, I mentioned that before. So the last example I have here is an example you can also download. I'll upload it to my blog and post it on Twitter, of course. It's just that we create something from the service portal, and when this has been ordered, we actually disable the user, but we don't want to delete the user right away, because sometimes they call in 5 minutes later saying, oh no, that was the wrong user, we actually both ordered and approved and everything, and you go like, didn't you read anything in your approval? Yes, but I don't know what happened. Anyway, that happens a lot. So what we do is to disable the user and then just leave it there. Then wait for a number of days and then delete the user or remove the user from groups or whatever we need to do. So this is a little trick I made for service manager to actually have it wait for those days and then continue at a specific date. Could be used for any kind of workflow where you need to wait some time and trigger the next step. So I made a little example and I actually also updated it last night, so that's why I haven't uploaded it yet. But what happens is that the search request looks like this, and it says, okay, we disable the user. Great, that's the first step. Easy runbook to do that. Next up, we set up an autocomplete activity. Because the third activity, as you can see here, is a manual activity. And the manual activity in here will actually it's not filled in from the beginning when it creates the template, but the runbook, the second runbook setup autocomplete will go in, first of all calculate what is the date in 30 days, and then it will set the actual scheduled end date of this activity. Let me just update this. All right. So you see this was empty from the beginning, but after Orchestrator actually set up the disable the user, it would trigger the runbook that would go in and find this activity, and it will, as you can see, calculate what is the day in 30 days. Well, for the demo, I set it to 0 days, so that's why the date is today. And it will set it to a stage called auto-approve. Well, it was that in the beginning too. Actually, this stage is what the runbook uses to actually find these activities. And then the scheduled end date is the date that it actually put in there. All right. So what happens then is that we have a runbook in Orchestrator here that runs every day. I've also set it to trigger immediately. You can also set it to trigger specific times of day. Goes into figure out, okay, what is the current date and time, and outputs it in a format that we can use here. And then it gets all the activities that is in the stage auto approve, is in the status in progress, and the scheduled end date is before the current time. So if they are supposed to continue, this will actually run. So if I run this and it finds the activity here, it will update the object, set it to completed, and you can write a message in here if you want to. This means that if this is waiting for a user to be deleted, anybody who has access can go in and complete this, and it will continue when they want to complete it. If they don't, it will just stay and wait as an open case. And of course, you should then, in your reports for SLA, have these taken out because it's waiting for a specific thing. You could even have a specific status on the search request saying up here, instead of in progress, saying waiting for auto-approval. Then the runbook, the monitor actually runs here, goes in, completes this activity. There we go. Now it's completed. Now it will continue to the next step and it will delete the user. And I wish I had more time to show it in detail, but you can get this from my blog, as I said, as soon as I post it, and download and use it. And as I said, also the template, and of course this is the same runbook I use. As you can see, it's in all my runbooks. I always start with this template runbook because I know the error handling is correct. And then I can easily do error handling in the other one. Saves me a lot of time. So what's next in Orchestrator? The next thing is Azure Automation. I need to mention that the Azure Automation is a cloud-based service, but you can so you don't need anything on your on-prem, but you can actually run stuff in what's called the hybrid worker on your on-prem environment. The thing is that currently there is a text editor which is based on PowerShell. There is the beginning of a graphical designer which has been put a lot of work in. So right now, mostly it's PowerShell-based text automation. And what we really need to for Azure Automation to be useful in Service Manager is, of course, a connector from Service Manager to Azure Automation. But there is one on the way. There is actually a GitHub project you can join if you are a good .NET developer to help. And also at Ignite, as far as I remember, Microsoft mentioned that they would release one. I have no information about that. But until then, if you want to be prepared for the future and you haven't started an orchestrator yet, it would be a good idea to look at what's called service management automation, which came in Orchestrator R2, because it's based on the same engine as Azure Automation. So anything you make in there, you can transfer directly. As long as you follow a few best practices, you can transfer it directly to Azure Automation when you want to. For that, there is connectors both from Syerson and also from the Swedish company GridPro, which I personally work with both of the companies. They have two connectors. They are both great for their different jobs. Yep. And now a final slide with some links. There's my own blog, some of my colleagues, for the tools that I mentioned, for the activity also. And also, if you go to Ryan's main page, which is this one here, it actually has a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff that he made. All right. Yep. And if you have any questions, well, you can just, I'm out of time, but you can just come up and ask me. And then remember to evaluate using the app. I can go back to that one. But thank you.